So you're going to be doing a writer's talk Friday, 7 o'clock at the Old School Arts Centre.
Yes, indeed I am.
And yep. is it a talk? Is it a Q&A? Like how are you planning to
it's
run
all
the
that, actually. I want to make it so that the audience feels that they are interacting with me, and it's a conversation. So I don't want to talk to people. I want them to talk with me. So I'll be asking the audience questions.
Okay.
And they can ask me questions after certain times as well. So we will rock and roll with that.
So writers spend a lot of time by themselves. It must be quite nice to have some people in the room with you.
Yes, well, my hope is that that we can fill more than a phone box for Friday night, and we can have a full room. I know of two or three people that are coming already, so the phone box is almost full.
So you have a book, The Trouble with the Twins. It's sitting right here in front of us, a memoir, and you are a twin yourself.
I am an identical twin with Chris.
With Chris. Where's Chris right now?
He's in Auckland, and he's a teacher like myself.
Okay, so all right, so that's the day job. But you also, as well as having written that book, because you wrote that a little while ago.
I did. That was in 2020, and it's been successful because when you write, you have no idea whether anybody's even going to like it.
Mm.
And it's been reprinted now for the third time.
Okay. Is it privately published or?
It's published by Anne Neville's publishing company.
Okay.
Create so Books. So there's a bit of a plug for Anne already.
Yes, yeah, she's doing the teenagers writing workshop over the weekend.
Yes.
So yeah, as part of the whole, because we've got the Whangaroa Writers World on at the moment, and the first author, Lance King, will be at the Old School tonight at 7, and you're doing Friday at 7, and Anne Neville on the weekend, and then I think we've got a book launch on the 1st of March, whatever day of the week that is, next week, with Kate Evans. Mm-hmm. So I'll be talking to her later on as well, but we've got Steve here now, and you do a blog as well?
Yeah, I do.
How long
a Glass Full of Water is its name.
And how long have you been doing that?
Since March of last year.
So is this a COVID thing, this writing?
Oh, good question. What about the blog?
Did all the writing, the urge to write, come through during COVID when you had nothing else to do?
No.
Or you're a teacher, so you're probably trying to do online teaching.
Yeah, well, let's not talk about online teaching. When I was teaching at Hamilton Boys High School, let's not go there. No, it actually all started with storytelling. I'm a storyteller, so all my stories were scripted. And it came to the point when I was sitting with my twin brother and his wife, Anne, and my wife, Val, at Scott's Epicurean Cafe in Hamilton. Mm. I just said, I'm going to write a book. It's about Chris and I getting into trouble and enjoying it. And so we wrote some notes down on a napkin, which I still have. I laminated it yesterday.
Oh, good.
Which I'll bring to my talk tomorrow night.
Yes.
As an artifact. And 700 hours later, it was finished. And what an effort. It absolutely consumes you when you write.
Right, so the urge to write was just so strong.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, interesting. Yes. Yeah, I've talked to other writers who are like that too. Like,
yeah, it's quite a discipline too. You know, people go, oh, do you do it by mood? No, you have to go, I'm going to write now, and then you write. And what I used to do, I used to write for 2 or 3 hours, often in the Shack Cafe here, and another cafe in Hamilton is called Space Cadet now. And I would write for, as I say, 2 or 3 hours, and then I go home and have a kip. I found it absolutely exhausting.
Right.
Almost excruciating.
Oh.
But worth it.
Okay. I'm quite intrigued that you're writing in cafes. I have the vision of a writer in a quiet, beautiful space by themselves, but you're in a noisy cafe.
Yeah, I don't need the noise. Once I start to write, I'm in a bubble.
Mm.
And I write, and I ignore the fact that I've just spent another $5 on a coffee and it's cold. And keep on writing.
But if someone comes up to talk to you because they see you at the cafe, do you just sort of wave them away? Or
Nobody tried.
They could see.
I could see that I didn't well, I was in a social space, but I wasn't there to talk. At that time, I wasn't there to talk. I was there to write.
Yeah.
Interestingly, too, from my point...
Handwriting?
Yes, it was handwritten.
Okay.
Now... my lovely wife, Val, typed it all.
Good on her.
60,000 words. But she had to translate the writing before she typed. In other words, it was scribble.
Okay.
She was my translator and my first editor. And she made sense of it, really, because it was a ramble, almost a stream of consciousness type of writing.
Yeah.
And she fixed a lot up, and then it went to an editor friend in Taranaki, Jan, and she did more work on it. Writers would not be where they are today without editors. They are incredibly good with the way they can just say, and they only suggest, they never say you should. They want to retain your voice. So you write, they say, how about doing this, change that word and that word. It's best to do as you're told because they really know what they're doing. And their magic, boof, the whole paragraph lifts. It's amazing.
So what is the book about, The Trouble with Twins?
It's a memoir about Chris and I getting into trouble in Auckland and other places. Our first memory, the first story is when I was 18 months old. Now, a lot of people look at me and go, you can't remember something when you were 18. Yes, I can.
Those are actually the easiest memories, aren't they?
Only a flicker of a story, not even a heading. But once you've got the flicker and you start to construct your characters and your story, the resolution, who the villains are, who the heroes are, then you're in business. So each story in the book took about 10 hours to write. They're not very long, but they are crafted. So it's a long process, but it's a lot of fun too.
And memories came back?
Oh,
things you hadn't thought about
back,
for years?
Flooding back. We always had these stories, and we were reminded by, I'm one of six children. I don't know how Mum and Dad was six.
Twins, where did you come in that order?
I was third, older sister, Linda. Then there was Chris, who was 5 minutes older than me, then myself, and then Jenny, Kathy, and Mike.
Oh, that would still be tough with two arriving at once. I remember the first day or the second day after my first child was born, and I was on the phone to my uncle or my aunt, one of the two of them, and it suddenly hit me that they'd had twins, and we were having a pretty hard time with our first baby. It was pretty tough, and it hit me like a freight train that they'd have twins, and what on earth was that like as a first-time parent? But it wasn't first for them either, but still this, yeah.
Well, for Mum, she didn't even know she was having twins.
Oh, no.
Remembering that this is 1956, so
yes,
I'm sure
no
your
scans.
Listeners are busy going, oh, right, okay, that's yes, we are 67. And when my father told his father that Mary had had twins, he said, son, that's not funny. You don't joke about things like that. Oh, my goodness.
As a kid, I thought being a twin would be really cool.
Oh, yes.
But as a parent, I understood that there would be extra work, so...
Yeah, Mum had to get extra helping for us for the children too. For us, she used to get Karatani nurses in to help us.
Yes,
and and back in the day, mums to be, because it was, you know, in society was so different. They're pregnant, not married, then we would take them into our place and give them a roof over their heads, and they would look after us.
Oh, these are girls that were sent away in shame.
Yes.
That was the attitude back then.
You sort of shake your head and wonder, but yep, it happened. Yep.
Wow. Okay. So for your talk on Friday night, are you reading from the book or what are you doing?
I will mention about my family first because I think that's important. I will read a story from the book. Actually, not. It's mostly funny stories. The one I'm going to read, the excerpt I'm going to read, is not a funny story, actually. So I thought I would just mix it up a bit. I'll talk about storytelling. I'll talk about the book, how it was done. It should be I think it should be interesting for people to listen to. Lots of little insights. And then finally, I'm having a chat about my blog.
So we will talk about the blog, but I want to know, do you read the book? Is it the first time you've read it, or you've read it a lot to people? Or
I read it all the time to my children in my classes at Tiuku School.
Right.
I read it daily, and the children will often then go and retell the story, or I will have a part of the story, and I'll say, right, I'm going to stop the story now. I want you to finish off. And I've found over the years that children have to get the story out of their heads. It almost hurts, but the pain, the figurative pain, will stop once they get the story out and they write their own story. I don't mind what they write about, how they interpret the story, as long as there are no superheroes. Not interested in superheroes.
Is it the death of creativity in children?
Absolutely,
or?
It's the death of creativity. They come from a screen. I am pretty much anti-screen, actually. I'm all for a solid book. I'm all for hard copy. I'm all for children interacting with the book, holding it carefully, looking after it. Yeah, I am a book fan for kids, absolutely. And for my book, I found too when I was at Hamilton Boys High School as a teacher, that if you get teenage boys reading and they don't know they're reading, then they'll enjoy it. So my book is in the library there,
yeah,
and it is snapped up by boys who, look, if you read a story a day, that's fine with me, and then they'll finish the book, and then they can say, I've read a whole book. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So you said your age before, you're at an age where you could retire. I presume you enjoy some aspects of teaching, being with the kids.
I love being with children. They make me laugh. They inspire me. I actually start each day, Aaron, with a little thought of what can I learn today. It keeps me fresh in the job, and I like that. I mean, yes, I'm 67 going on 68, but I still feel young. Lots of wrinkles, no hair, but I still
can
think
confirm this is true for listeners.
Okay. For those listeners out there, if you want to look like a scorched almond, then yes, have a look at me.
Yeah, well, it just will be coming to some people no matter what they do anyway. So so the blog, tell us about the blog. So that started, is that around the same time as writing the...
That was in March of last year. I've been having the ideas for the blog for a long time too. It's about kindness stories, about watching people being a part of education aid work in Africa and India. Being a part of our community, I wrote about Brian, the homeless guy who passed away.
Yep.
I've written about the pantry in Raglan.
Yep.
I've written about Mike in the community house. This morning's story is about a 501 who had a chat with me about 6 months ago. I am fascinated by people's stories. And I love kindness, which is never showy. It seeks no reward. It just is about connection, helping people, empathy and compassion, and getting on with it. If you're kind, words are good, but actions are a whole lot better.
And did you decide that was the topic you were going to write about, or that was just the topic you wrote about? That's just what came out, what you felt the urge to write about?
Yeah, a strong desire to get the stories down to... I'm a kind person, and I love to be kind. I am motivated by being kind. I can't help myself. I just love to be kind, and I love to see kindness around me. I think in a COVID world, which is still in many ways is still there, I think kindness is an antidote to cynicism. And I love to see people, no matter what their circumstances are, looking after other people. In fact, look after your family first, then look after your neighbours, then look after your community. I think Raglan is a place with a whole lot of kindness going on, and I want to write about it and share it with the wider world. I've had 6,000 people have interacted with it so far. It's around the world. It's been read in Lithuania, Ireland.
Yeah,
Pakistan, and yeah, so on.
Do you have to promote it? Do you have to get on social media and push it out there? What do you do?
I don't have any social media contacts whatsoever. I promote it by my little card that I give out.
I've got one here. I need my reading glasses too.
Yes, you do. It's very small budget.
Yeah,
to match the size.
Tiny budget, I'd say.
I think word of mouth, actually, and I think people saying, "Oh, I like that little story," and then sharing it, so they can do the social media thing. I'm happy just building up the readership of the blog.
Yeah.
Little bit by little bit, and I'm happy with that. It's working. It's getting.
Are there other blogs that you read?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's just you?
I didn't even know what a blog was before I started.
Oh, wow. How did you start then?
I got special help from one of my colleagues at school who said, Steve, I will help you set up the blog. This is what you do. And so lovely Cynthia, who's away, she's got a little baby now, she helped me. She was amazing. She knew with technology that I had, shall we say, limited abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so she helped me set it up. And I still ask her for help occasionally. But it's all go. It's all good.
So, but how did she know that you needed a blog? Like, what were you doing?
She didn't. I told her I need to set up a blog. Cynthia, right. Can you help me?
Right. So you knew you wanted to. You had something to write about. You wanted to write these stories.
And I didn't. I don't know whether I'll write another book. I did know that I wanted my messages to be to another audience that might. In fact, because my book is about us getting into trouble, at times there was not much kindness shown. So it's not like a redemptive blog,
yeah.
But it's quite it's completely different from my book. People will, have a read.
And I guess because you're getting in trouble, this is something when you're at boys' high, the teenage boys will identify with.
Look,
not all, but many.
Many?
Yes.
Well, they identify.
Probably most.
The fact that you have made yourself vulnerable in the book.
Yeah.
That you've done dumb things, and then they go, well, we've done dumb things. But why, sir, do you want to share that? And I said, well, I don't mind having a laugh at myself, and I don't mind if we can get a message or two about the things that we did. And anything disgusting, anything naughty, teenage boys will love to read.
Yeah, it's almost too easy. Yeah, it's an interesting thing you say about being vulnerable. I've been to lots of school prize givings and things, and they get a special speaker, and sometimes they're inspiring, but they all think that they have to give advice to the kids, and it tends to, I think at that age, I seem to remember getting more advice than I knew what to do with or wanted. Mm. And I often thought it would be interesting if someone got up and talked about their mistakes.
Yes.
That they'd made. I thought that would get a whole different level of attention.
Oh, yeah, you can hear a pin drop. And when I'm telling stories in the class or reading my book in the class and getting the kids to write, there are no behavior problems because they there's an urgency within them to tell their version of your story or their story, but no superheroes. And then they share. And I've found it works really well with English as a second language students as well.
Yeah.
We did it at high school. I have done the storytelling thing at Waikato Uni when I was a guest lecturer there. I've had a ball.
So, and this is all in the last few years.
Mm.
Did you know 20 years ago, did you know you wanted to write or anything?
No, I don't think my wife knew she was going to marry an author or married an author.
Yeah.
No, this is all relatively recent. And I'm thinking also that I should write a book and write a blog before I lose all my marbles as well.
Mm. Well, you seem to be a fair way away from that at the moment, I'm pleased to say.
Thank you, Aaron. How far would you give me?
Oh, quite a way. I think for anyone who's potentially coming, no need to worry that they'll be gone by tomorrow night. I mean, that's our main concern at this point, isn't it? So is everyone a writer then? Because you're getting everyone in your classes to write.
Is everyone a writer? You know, I think most people are writers. They just don't know it yet. I mean, everybody has a story.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's got a story, and every story is a good one. I would love more people to write. A lot of people start to write a book and they never finish. A lot of people finish writing the draft but never get it published. There are millions of books out there that will never come to the light of day.
Yeah. All right, so folks, we're talking to Steve Horn, who's a local author. He's going to be doing a talk Friday night, 7 o'clock at the Old School. And just remind us again what you're talking about. I mean, you've got your book and your blog.
My writing journey.
Your writing journey,
which is from storytelling to writing the book to writing the blog. And, I should also mention that I write regularly to newspapers, letters to the editor.
It's a very old-fashioned trick, that one.
Oh, look. People do actually read letters to the editor, and they're either serious ones or funny ones.
Yeah.
New Zealand Listener, I've got letters in there. I've won the caption competition few times. I sort of write little bits on the side as well.
So for people who think they might like to write but can't imagine how they would get started, this might be quite good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have a moan.
They can do that too, can they? Because there will be interaction, as you promised at the start of the interview. Yeah. All right, Steve. Thank you heaps for coming in. Nice to chat.